Well, I'm live from home. Sims is in the studio. We're doing this on purpose as like a test. But I hope your Friday's off to a good start. Good morning, Simpiwe. How are you?
Good morning, Gareth. I'm good. How are you?
I'm very good. Very, very good. We've got a lot of exciting stuff on the show this morning. And I'm not just saying that. It's not spin. It's not trying to get people excited for no good reason. I'm absolutely sure the comments section is excited long before I come into the show or you come into the show. They start talking to each other at the break of day. So, all right, the reasons I'm excited. We've got finally, after how many weeks we've been talking about getting someone on who knows all the latest things about tech and gadgets and all the rest. And usually you're our person on the ground on this. But we've actually got Tiernus van Rensburg coming on. He's a South African technology journalist and a data scientist. We've got so much to talk to him about. The latest stuff in phones, the latest stuff in internet speeds, the latest stuff in all kinds of exciting developments that I've been waiting to talk to him about. So he'll be joining us a little bit later on. Ben is joining us live from Spain, of all things. He's not on holiday. He flew out, it was yesterday or the day before. He flew out like last minute, got an invitation to go and play golf in Spain. You know, it's nice. If that's what you love, if playing golf is your thing, as it is for Ben, then I suppose going out and playing golf is exactly what you want to be doing with your time. So he's going to be joining us online as well. And I also thought, because both of our guests are online, we've got to test out some new stuff too. So we're going to be doing that this morning. And then I have some stories for you that you're going to love. The first one of these stories, I love this. I can't help myself. Is a story about the library and the lighthouse of Alexandria. So, you know, Alexandria is a city in Egypt. It's on the Mediterranean coast. It was the site of the lighthouse, the Pharos of Alexandria. It was built during the Ptolemaic era in ancient Egypt. And that was the era just after Alexander the Great, when his general Ptolemy went and established himself as the kind of new ruler of Egypt. And his dynasty was established afterwards. They were good and bad. So Simpiwe, they were Greek, but they ruled Egypt. They did a fairly good job. At least two of them were excellent at administration and running things properly and military order. And they made the place a center of learning and scientific discovery, all those cool things. But there were also a couple of weird things about them. They were almost all called Ptolemy or Cleopatra. The girls were all called Cleopatra. The boys were all called Ptolemy. And to make matters worse, they also married their brothers and sisters and produced offspring.
Table. That's
dodgy as hell, right? So that's what we know about that era. It all started with Ptolemy the First. They called him Sota. And he was a very learned man. He was Alexander's friend and general during his conquests of some 23 to 30 years. And then they built something there. They built two really great things. Three, probably, is fair to say. First one was the lighthouse, which was on this piece of land plotted out into the sea. You know, this is the ancient world. They didn't have electricity. So how do you build a lighthouse that can be seen from far enough away that ships can start slowing down, so you can guide them into port, so that during rough seas you can send signals to the ships offshore? And obviously lighthouses now, we don't even need that much because ships are so well put together with such advanced technology that now they can kind of figure out what's happening long before anyone on the land has to tell them. But when they built this lighthouse, they put a huge big furnace at the top of it. So they could make a massive fire, and they had mirrors and things, and it could be seen from miles and miles away. So it was quite an innovation for the ancient world. They're now discovered 22 massive blocks from the lighthouse of Alexandria. They've been submerged for 700 years as part of the Pharos project. They're digging them out, and the aim is to actually construct and digitally build the entire ancient wonder. Once the tallest man-made structure in the world. So that's pretty cool. It was built around 280 BCE, as I told you just now, and destroyed by an earthquake in the year 1303. So it stood for quite a long time. It was virtually revived with the hopes of helping the public experience its lost grandeur in battle, rather better understand its historical construction. So they've done this. They did something amazing the other day, and this is not just for people who are interested in history, but also for people who care about architecture and art, and maybe you're a Catholic, and so this is special to you. But they've got a digital twin built of St. Peter's Basilica in Rome. So if you go to a website, I'll see if I can find you the address before the end of the show, and we'll post it. You can actually go into St. Peter's Cathedral in Rome, and you can look at absolutely anything you want in unbelievable levels of detail. By the way, this would be the levels of detail that you would never have even if you went there in person and were given a guided tour, because you can spend time, as much time as you want. You can read inscriptions on things. You can look at the detail of polishing on marble all over the walls and floors. You can observe beautiful works of art. It's really quite something. And it's taken them, I think it was about 12 to 15 years to actually do this. But it is unbelievably detailed. And thanks to this, we'll never have to worry if something goes wrong. Let's say there's an earthquake in Rome and a small piece of plaster falls from the ceiling. They can always go back to this digital twin, which has every single piece of St. Peter's mapped out in like 4K. And they'll be able to say, okay, well, the line goes like that, like that, like that. And then they'll be able to repair it. Isn't that cool?
That's amazing. Like, I want to see it.
Yeah. it's pretty wild. And the fact that you can look at that from your home is just incredible. So I don't know if you're as excited as I am about that stuff, but I think that's where technology is just blowing my mind. It's phenomenal.
No, I'm excited. That means I don't have to leave my house. I can like see different places and get a better view, as you said. Like, you know, sometimes you like plan these trips and you want to go touch things and see things, but because it's so ancient and fragile, like they don't allow you to touch it. You need to see it from 300 meters away and all of that.
Yep.
Like now you get a real close up, and like that's amazing.
Well, we've got a couple of comments here. They should bring back the Colossus of Rhodes, but make it look like Jan Buchel. That's from Congo, Chris. Just by the way, I know that James has been trying to get Jan Buchel, but Jan Buchel is ghosting James. He has not replied. He hasn't replied to any of James's messages. So I think James is feeling very slighted by that. Remember, he's the guy. There are probably a few people who are listening to this now going, who the hell is Jan Buchel? Well, Jan Buchel is the Hollandse zanger, wat de lieflijke liedje, which is called what? Rhodos, allemaal naar Rhodos, because obviously Colossus of Rhodes, because Congo Chris knows these things and remembers. So he's the one who sings that song about, how does it go again, James? It goes, ik ga naar een warm land, ebers op vakantie. Lekker bakken in de zon. That one, right? Now it's going to be stuck in my fucking head all day. So, speaking of songs that get stuck in your head all day, yesterday Gord Laws posted something that screwed up my whole
Gord
day.
Doing?
Okay, so Sims, I love Gord too, but he's going to have to pay for this one. This is a disaster. So he was commenting on... There's this brilliant, brilliant song that goes, my love has got no money, he's got his strong beliefs. You know that one? Old song, no. 90s kind of dance song. Well, more and more people just want more and more freedom and love. What you waiting for? You don't know it. Freed from desire, minded senses purifier. No? No?
Before matter.
No, okay. Well, before no, okay. Fine. You're missing out. Anyway, it's a good song. And he made this comment that before you had Google to search lyrics, you had to guess what the singer was singing, or if you were lucky enough, you could find some scrap of paper inside a cassette or a CD cover, and that was how you knew the lyrics. So
yes.
for years he thought the words, my lover's got no money, he's got his trombolese, Okay, he thought a trombolise was what she was singing about, because he goes, my lover's got no money, he's got his trombolise. Okay, because that's what he thought. So he's decided, and Gord is a genius for this stuff, he's decided now trombolise is an actual word, and it means, okay, besides not having money, you're actually quite a lacquer person. So,
okay.
So that would make all of us kind of trombolise. We have no money, but we're lacquer people.
Okay.
What do you think?
Okay.
No?
I like that. Yes, that's true. You know?
Trombolise, guys. Trombolise. I'm telling you, it's a thing. On Wednesday, you told us your audience were boring. Look who's boring today, not doing the show from home and boring about history on a Friday. Oh, for God's sake, limited edition. Why don't you just find another show to watch or listen to? I am not in the game of trying to compete with my audience or to compete with other people for audience. So just go. Just go. I really don't care. Wait, I'll give you 2 seconds. Hang on. Okay, I think he's gone or she's gone. It's fine. That's perfect. Anthony Fasaki says, that was a real treffer. Dirk says, she's Gen Z. That's you, Sims. She doesn't care about anything that happened before she was born.
I'm not Gen Z, but like, come on now. There's some sort
of Conga Chris is just telling James not to worry and not feel disheartened about Jan Bichel. He is op vakantie. So when he gets back from vakantie, then he'll answer James's message. So we can only hope. Bitcoin Butt says, if we had a lighthouse in our Alexandra, it would be looted.
Oh, yes, definitely. Definitely.
Yeah, so there's lots going on in the comment section. I also see, so I've got very exciting news on the blind history front. So I spoke to Anthony Medera the other day, and we will be launching a new season of Blind History in the next month. We're going to probably record our first episode before the end of July. So that's very exciting. And Ant and I will be back with new and fresh episodes. I think it'll be season 8 or even 9. I must go and check. But brand new episodes of Blind History coming. So what are you planning for the weekend, Simpiwe?
I got some work.
Work. That doesn't sound good.
Yeah, it doesn't, but we're going to be doing some shooting, and I volunteered to be kind of like an extra on set, so that's what I'm going to
do. Oh, wow, so you're going on TV, is it? Is this for a TV show, for something YouTube, or what?
I'm not even sure. I think Caroline still needs to give proper details, but it's something. I was like, oh, I don't mind. I have a Saturday free. I'll pull up. I'll be an extra. They've told us what to
this
not
is
do.
For. Is this for something we're producing? That's cool.
I think so, yes. Yes. And so, yeah, okay, that's what I'm going to be up to this weekend. And then Sunday, just indoors, watch some movies, because it's too cold to go out. Like, no.
Uh-huh. I've used every excuse I can to not have to go anywhere, just so that I can be warm. That's kind of my plan, because if you are, and particularly being on a set, you never know where it is. And, you know, people who are putting productions together, they don't really care whether you're cold or not. They have shit to do. They've got, like, you've got to start recording at 6 a.m. or whatever, and it's not fun.
Yes, it's not fun, especially when they tell you what to wear and you're just like, this is a bit too light, eh, for the weather. doesn't sound like winter clothes at all. And they're like, well, that's the look.
No.
And that's what we're gonna do. You're gonna show
so listen up. We've got a few tech stories that I want to save for when Tennis joins us later on. Apparently, Japan has set a new internet speed record, which is very exciting. But you've got something to tell us about Akon City, which has been abandoned. First of all, forgive me for being stupid about this, but what is Akon City?
Okay. So for those who might not know who Akon is, he's the guy who brought us the legendary song, Lonely, I am so lonely, I have nobody, all on my own. That guy, right? And he's from Senegal, if I'm not mistaken. And what he decided to do, like 7 years ago, is announce that he's going to build the smart city and make a real life Wakanda. you know, like, and he's going to be the guy that brings this new technology back to his home country, Senegal. We're like, amazing. So this is, we love this it.
Isn't this a lot like what our president, Cyril Ramaphosa, said in the one State of the Nation address, where he said, we're going to build a smart city near Lanseria. And I don't know about you, I've been to Lanseria a couple of times. I haven't seen any signs of a smart city. Seen a lot of dumb things, but no smart city. So our president's even worse than Akon.
Yeah, it seems like they've been reading the same book, because it's 7 years later and there's been like not even a tenth of the city built. And what's interesting with the story is that he picked a particular land where people had already occupied it. And so he kind of had to get the people out, and he promised them that, hey, when you guys come back, you'll be living in this place. It's going to look so much better. We'll pay for your accommodation wherever you're staying now, whilst we build this, you know, smart city. And how he got investment left, right, and center. But another big investment thing was crypto. And he was like, you know, crypto is going to be the one thing that I invest all my money in, so that I use the money that I get from crypto to pay for this smart city. And we've seen how crypto has performed, and he's kind of lost lots of millions. But also people started coming out, I think 2-3 years ago, saying, hey man, like, there's nothing happening. The city or the land is vacant. And he was like, no, we're busy. Sounding like a very South African politician. We are busy, we are working, we're getting the job done. And 7 years later, he's finally come out to say, you know what? I can't do it. It's not going to happen. I'm sorry. So the smart city has been abandoned. Just like that.
I'm very sorry to hear that, because, I mean, any great idea you kind of get excited about, you can't help yourself. You're like, oh, okay, maybe they'll get this right and it's going to be a walkaway success. And I see Bitcoin Boots saying that actually this guy basically brought on a crypto coin called Acoin, and he just mugged everybody of their money. So
that's what people are speculating. Yes, they're speculating that he basically bamboozled all his investors, and because you're selling the dream, like, this is going to be the real life Wakanda in Africa, and this is how we're going to do it. So he did get investment. He got a different, and he was like, I'm going to do different businesses in order to fund this. And one of those was crypto, and he started his own crypto thing, Acorn something, as Bitcoin is saying. But like, that was the whole thing, to fund this. He was like, I'm starting this to make money here so I can fund the project. No one saw the money. 7 years later, gone.
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of people complaining even about President Trump, because he launched a couple of crypto tokens. And apparently they are doing moderately okay now, but the people who've invested are all kind of, and the ones who are making money out of it, certainly, are like insiders. And I think you've just got to be, it's like anything else. You can't say crypto is bad. There are bad people in every business. You've just got to know that some of these people are there to rip you off and steal your money, and other people are there to create value for everyone. It's like you choose the bank you go to, you choose the investment company that you put your investments into, you choose your business partners. And you choose the kind of people you want to do deals with. Otherwise, you're going to find sharks in every direction. So whether or not Akon is one of those sharks, time will tell. But man, there's a lot of fucking crookery going around. I mean, this General Mkwanazi, right? We got to talk about this, because we haven't really discussed it.
What a week.
I spoke to Waris about this, because I actually don't know a whole lot about this story. And I thought Waris is very informed, because he knows what the underworld is actually all about. He knows some amazingly connected people. He knows some very dangerous people. I was like, well, let me try and figure out what the hell's going on here. Anyway, he said to me, listen, the reality is it's criminals all the way down. You know, there are people who owe people favors. Some of those people who owe other people favors are now in government. They've been in a position to offer other people high-ranking jobs in the police or important parastatal jobs. or they've been able to help their nephew or niece or daughter or cousin or whatever. And it's just crooks all the way down. So you've got people who owe people things who are now beholden, and they've got them by the balls. And so these very, very dangerous people who are probably involved in all kinds of other criminal activity, including the drug trade, poaching, robbery syndicates, hijacking syndicates, cash in transit heist people. These guys are all intermingled into parts of the police force. And now General Mkhwanazi, who clearly is either completely unafraid, A, B, very stupid, or C, believes it's time to just call out these guys, has done what appears to be the right thing. There are lots of people like Aubrey Mashiqi who are calling out the ANC at the moment, saying this is all kind of like a setup for what's going to happen when Cyril leaves. They're busy positioning new people inside the party. But I don't know how you feel. I've seen this General Mkhwanazi speak for, what, like the last 6 to 8 months. He's been very vocal about his job as KwaZulu-Natal Commissioner of Police. He's been on TV a couple of times saying his say. He's been in the media generally answering questions. I hesitate to declare anyone some kind of national hero before they've proven themselves, but he seems like the real thing. He seems like he's one of these people who genuinely wants to clean stuff up and make the country governable and better and put some bad guys in prison. So I don't know if I'm getting excited for nothing, but if he is what I think he is, we've got to support this guy because he's in real danger. First of all, some proper criminals, right? But he's also, he's doing something that, I've said this before on the show, there are two qualities we're really missing in South Africa at the moment. Number one is drive. You know, those people who get up every morning and they just, they've got to get out there and hustle. And there are a lot of people like that, but not enough. We need just millions of people with drive, the unbelievable capacity to wake up, get the day going, sell stuff, buy stuff, make stuff happen. I love those people. I don't know about you, but we need more of them. And the other quality we really need in this country, which is so scarce, is bravery, is courage. We need people who are brave, who will say what they actually think, who will stand up against authority, who will stand up against corruption, who will stand up against the decline of so much of what we see around us, streets, lighting, electricity, basic provisions, water. I mean, I'm looking forward next week. I don't know about other parts of Gauteng, but I'm looking forward next week to like a week of no water. They say it's maintenance. But, you know, there used to be a time where they would do this kind of maintenance and it didn't mean everybody had no water for a week. Like they had enough people to make it quick and easy, get in there, fix this pipe, reconnect that. They'd be able to do this in a fairly efficient way. They can't do it like that anymore. Now you have to get on with a week of no water at home, which is ridiculous because that's not only unsanitary, it's not only uncivilized, it's also very, very dangerous. Water is a basic human right. You need to have water at home. How else do you cook? How else do you wash things? How else do you wash yourself? How else do you flush your loo? You know, these are things that are very, very basic. And it seems to me that all of the people in this country, regardless of whether you're rich or poor, whether you are living in suburbia, in a township, or in the rural areas, everybody's just losing. And we need to be able to fix that. And courageous, brave people have to be the ones who say that. And this General Mkhwanazi seems to me to be a brave person. So what are your thoughts on him?
I'm actually quite happy that he's come forth and expose what really happens. I'm not surprised that there's so much mafia interaction, if I could say that, in government, in this country. Like, there's syndicates on syndicates on syndicates, and you realize for them to operate, they do need an inside man, and the inside man tends to be someone in government in a high position. Yeah. My only concern is did he think this out first before coming to the public and telling us about what's really happening? Because he is in danger, especially even if he's lying to us, they're always going to do something. Even if this is a big lie, something is going to happen. And if this is the truth, then, you know, then people want to protect themselves and make sure that, like, there's nobody speaking. So I do hope that he has planned this out, thought this through, and also has his own army of men who say, if he's taken out, it's fine. I'm going to step forth and continue with this thing. Because that's what you need, essentially. You do need an army of people who are going to be like, it doesn't matter if you take this guy out. We're still going to pursue this thing. We're still going to see justice for it. Because that's the only way we're going to get real change. And he does need other people to support him. So, yes, the ordinary South African can say, well done. But he needs the people who are in those positions to also say, you know what, I'm heartful of this thing. I'm going to snitch, and these are the people A, B, C, D that have been doing this thing. Finish and draft. That's it. And once we see that, I get, we are gone as a country. We are going to see change.
Yeah. Listen, I really hope he's. I hope he's got some bodyguards, and I hope he's paying attention to his own security, because you know what happens. I mean, we were talking about Didi Mabuza the other day, who I'm really not sad is dead. Because I still have not found anyone, and I've asked everybody I could see, from the guy at the petrol station to politicians to political analysts. I'm trying to find someone who can tell me one good thing Didi Mabuza did. Most people go, who? And this guy was our deputy president. They put him in the ground last week. And by the way, I'm not just for sensation speaking ill of the dead or anything, but this guy was a real crook. There were two men. One was a counselor in Bombela who went missing, and there was one guy who was in the ANC in Mpumalanga, quite high up on the chain, and they both just disappeared, and then their bodies turned up later and they were dead. They had been in, it had been made to look like they were either in car accidents or that they'd been shot by some, you know, random person with a gun. But they were political assassinations. There's no other motive to kill these guys at all. And everybody at the time was saying, even though the inquest didn't ever come to any conclusive proof on this, that the man at the top of this, the guy who'd ordered it, was Didi Mabuza. Now, this guy was our deputy president, no less. So he was the second most important person in South Africa on the chain of command. And he was ordering political assassinations, if everyone is to be believed in terms of these stories. And remember, there were lots of investigative journalists trying to look into it. And then they were threatened and they were told, someone's going to kill you if you keep scratching around here. So we do live in like a gangster state, right? And it's my assumption is, and I think this should be everyone's assumption from now on. I know we spend a lot of time like beating up on government, but trust me, when they do something good, I am only too happy to compliment them. What I've realized in the last while, and this is what we should all do from now on, just to save ourselves and our sense of kind of what this country is all about and to keep yourself sane. I just assume anyone involved in government or anything who's dealing on behalf of government is a crook. I just assume they're crooked. They're 100% criminal. And then if they prove further on, because I will immediately have my wits about me. I'll know that this person is going to try and steal. They're going to try and kill. They're going to try and lie. I will assume the worst about them if they work for government. And that goes for everything from president right the way down to like some municipal official. Okay. That way, if they surprise me along the way and they're actually a good person or a competent person, I'll be like, oh, wow, this is terrific. But if they don't, I won't be disappointed. Does that make sense?
Ah, I get you. 100%. It makes
all the sense in the world. Yeah, just assume you're dealing with a complete fucking crook and you can't go wrong.
I like that. I also believe that our politicians should not have podcasts. I recently discovered that the DA now has a podcast, and I'm just like,
oh, no.
This is what makes me not want to trust you guys, even if I wanted to, because why do you now have a studio and mics and you guys are interviewing each other about the work that you're doing? Stop talking, show us.
I completely agree with you. But remember, the DA are not the first ones to do this. The EFF had their own studio like 2 years ago already. You remember, they were shopping around for microphones. But that was when Floyd and Buiseni and Dalim Pofu and all of them were still there. Now it's just Julius. There's no point in him doing a show because he'll be talking to himself.
Yes, and even that, when EFF, I was like, why? Stop talking. Yeah. Show us the work. The work will speak for itself. And then people who are political analysts, they'll invite you onto their show. Because all it's doing now and all it looks like is like this echo chamber of you guys like, yeah, we're doing good. Yes, you are doing good. We're doing great. Yes, we want to do the. It's like, shut up. You guys are just in your own bubble. Shut up and actually go to work. Yeah. Stop the podcast. Right. I'm with you. Gareth, last week you're like, people must stop with podcasts. When's the cutoff date again? Because, wow, it's enough.
It's the end of this month, Simpiwe. Pedile. Stop. Pedile.
Yeah, I agree. No, it's done. Pedile. Pedile. Asifuna kuva lutho. Bazalwane. Stop. So everybody, right. Politicians, celebrities, rappers, the Gen Zs, the wannabes, the upcoming, the has-beens, everybody, like, stop.
All right. I believe Ben is on the line, so let us go live to Spain. Good morning, Ben.
Hello. Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes. Testing. We can hear you. How's it, Ben?
That's so good. Wow, guys. What's happening your side? Are you not
Are
together?
You in our gown?
Of course.
No, but hang on.
If I'm in a hotel, I'm in a gown.
No, we decided we're going to test this out. We've got an online guest today, and we were worried about our internet at the studio yesterday. But I want to know how you are here if you were recording on the bounce just 2 days ago. What happened in between? You got like a last-minute invitation to something cool?
Yeah, guys, when I say something cool, like the coolest, I am currently in Andalusia. So LIV Golf is a really important thing in sports. Well, I mean, look, maybe not really important, but it's a very, very cool thing. So they have events all around the world, and I got invited through Tourbase to come and just be here for the week, which kind of coincides with an episode we're about to do on the Bounce Show around LIV Golf. So what it's like to actually be here, what the event is all about. And the great thing is that it's at a golf course that I've wanted to go to since I was a wee child. We're going to Valderrama today, so it'll be Valderrama today, tomorrow, so 3 days. I don't know if I could be happier right now as a human being. I've just woken up outside of my window here. I can see the Rock of Gibraltar. It's we're right on the coast. Bit of a long travel day to get here, so Doha, Malaga, and then a bit of a bus drive. But we're here, and yeah, I got a bit stuck at last night, a little bit the first night exuberance from the group. But we are actually, we're at this hotel. We're the first people ever stay at the hotel as well. So people, I'm the first person to be in a gown in this room.
Wow. So it's brand new.
It's super, super special. So I'm filming some content as well. So there'll be lots of videos and things about what I'm doing this weekend, which I'll catch you up on when I get back. But yeah, just happiest of places.
All right. Well, we know you've got a full day of exciting Andalusian golf and other things involved. So let's get into sport in South Africa. What do we have this weekend? I believe the Springboks are in PE. Am I right?
Yeah. Going to Gqeberha for Willy LaRue's 100th test. So Willy's had some detractors over the years, of course. Some people say he's cuck. Outwardly just say he's cuck. And some people say he's an absolute sporting maverick. So depending on where you sit in that spectrum between there, I mean, whether you're a tiny in Velkorb who's going to shout and scream at the TV tonight or tomorrow, sorry, or someone who's just always loved the way he plays. He started his career against Italy. He's now getting his 100th cap against Italy. I mean, Willy's been through it all here. A career spanning 12, 13 years. The guy's won 2 World Cups. He's finished third in another one. British and Irish Lions Test Series winner. He's played a staggering 20 times against the All Blacks. So this guy's career is something to really be impressed by. His success rate is 69% in the Bock jersey. It's cool to see milestones like this if you love sports and obviously if you love the team. So that'll be 5 o'clock on Saturday. Of course, last week, people were mostly disappointed with the Bucks because they felt like there was going to be a big score at the ground. it didn't materialize. The second half, in fact, they lost 21-14 to Italy, basically. Italy didn't have their full-strength backline, still have a decent pack, and they pretty much came here to spoil the Springboks sort of play and be a bit more sort of like, you know, disruptive. So I don't think that's going to work this week for them. I think it was a good strategy last week on the Highveld. It definitely blunted the box. But I reckon with Russie's, I think, 11 changes to the team this week, including Vili coming back at fullback, I think we're going to see a much more fluent and fluid Bok performance here. Grant Williams and Marnie Libok being the 9 and the 10 is also going to make a big difference, I think, to what this backline does. And the forward pack, if you just look at that, I think that's the heaviest front row the Springboks have ever put on. Thomas Du Toit, I think, weighs about 130 kilograms. Vilko Lowe weighs about 144. And then Malcolm Marks is a skinny guy in the middle at about 116. So, good team. It's a really good team. It's an exciting bench coming through. So, that'll be at 5. Other big rugby for the weekend. Wales currently are on the cuckest losing streak of all time, basically. They've lost 18 test matches in a row. Now, Wales used to be bloody good at rugby, like bloody good. In the 70s, when men were men, they probably had the best international team, which was the backbone of the best of British and Irish Lions team. And even in the like the early 2000s, they were pretty good when Gatland was okay at what he was doing. You know, Wales used to have a lot of guys who were basically farmers' kids or good DNA from the mines. And then now they're just basically orange and play football. So they haven't got the stock they used to. They just don't. I mean, one of the biggest stories of Welsh rugby in recent times is that their star wing went to the NFL. So, yeah, sorry, Wales. So now they're playing in Japan. So last week, Japan dicked them. Totally. They're like, okay, we're playing Wales. These oaks are pasty. We're going to play them in the heat. And Wales were good in the first half, and then they just basically got sapped out from there. So they'd lost 18 test matches in a row. They're looking to break that streak. I think it's 7 o'clock tomorrow morning, Saturday. If you really want to see misery at a car crash, Wales are playing Japan. After that, France are going to be playing New Zealand. So France were damn good last week against New Zealand. Very, very narrow win for the All Blacks, despite playing essentially a C French team. That French team's got a couple of extra players that will bolster this team this week, so that'll be a really good game. It's going to be super tight. And then that'll be at 9, and then the British and Irish Lions tour, they are playing a New Zealand-Australian sort of invitational team at the Adelaide Oval. They should win that because this invitational team, it looks a lot like a Barbarians team. It's not particularly strong. It won't be particularly well-gelled, so they'll win that one. But then, guys, obviously Wimbledon's the big thing for the weekend because we're now in the finals.
Hang on. Before you move on to tennis, you still haven't told us about your experience at Loftus last week because you went to watch the book in Italy. How was it? Were you on the West Pavilion? Like, give us the detail here.
No, Gareth, I'm not at West Pavilion. I'm at the stage now where I'm more a grandstander. I've put my time in the West Pavilion. You know, I've earned my stripes. I've definitely got the scars to prove it. No, it's cool, but like, you know, the thing about Bok rugby right now, I think expectation is at the highest level possible, and people go there expecting absolute fireworks and something special. And quite frankly, at the ticket prices that people are paying, they believe they should get a bit more. And last week's game was a bit flatter than usual, especially that second half. And the weird thing is that it's hard to have a flat Bok experience because everyone's about 8 or 9 brandies in. So the crowd's up for it. The way they played last week was just a bit shite. But, you know, Loftus being Loftus on the B fields pre and post game, I always said, like, if you're a Cape Townian and you think the Cape Town Stadium's really great or you've done quite a lot, you've got to make the pilgrimage, the Afrikaans pilgrimage to Loftus Versfeld. It's such a beautiful, it's a work of art. It really is. Because it's always that balance between being, it's like nice, but it's also kind of dingy. It's like, it's at that perfect sweet spot where you don't feel shitty about it, but you feel relaxed because it's so unpretentious. Yeah, you have to go to Loftus at some stage of your life. I don't care if it's even for like a URC game, whatever it may be. It's great. I will continue to go there. Another thing about being in Joburg is that because Ellis Park is such a crack den, it's hard for Joburgers to get really excited about a local stadium. So Loftus is a small Caltrain trip away, and then before you know it, there you are.
Ellis Park is such a crap den.
I mean, the thing about that is that they'll dress Ellis Park up once a year for a bock test, and credit to them, you know. Like, all the sort of zombies and meth addicts, they kind of get pushed about a two-kilometer buffer, which is quite a feat of engineering, really. You know, there's guys with shambox and all kinds of stuff. They make it doable.
All right, let's talk about Wimbledon, because this is, to me, also one of those things that makes winter slightly bearable. I'm not a big tennis fan, but everyone, even if you don't care about tennis, you get into Wimbledon. You just have to sit in front of the TV for a couple of minutes, especially towards the semifinals, quarterfinals even, and it draws you in. It's very exciting.
Yeah, so last week I referred to the women's side of things like cats on crack, and I stick with it, Gareth, because, I mean, if you look at the women's draw, it eventually got to the semis yesterday, where Iga Świątek, she's a past champion, the Polish woman, she's the eighth seed, and she played a chick called Benčić from Switzerland. 6-2, 6-love. I mean,
sure.
We're at the business end of things, right? And you telling me, I mean, it's so odd, like, especially on grass. Like, it's all over the place. It really is. 6-2, 6-love for a semi-final of Wimbledon. I mean, if you were really banking on seeing this, getting your money's worth in center court yesterday, that was a quickie. And then this chick called Anna Samova, she's like, failed to qualify in previous years. She then got to the semifinals versus Aryna Sabalenka, who we said was going to be the favorite. I mean, she's bigger and stronger than the rest. And Sabalenka, again, in a Grand Slam this year, she has now melted. So she lost the semifinal 6-4, 4-6, 6-4. So at least it was a good game. But yeah, Sabalenka, she got into the past two Grand Slam finals, and now she's out of this one.
There were a couple of good games. I caught a little bit of that Świątek game yesterday, but I saw Hugh Grant fell asleep at Wimbledon. Now, I just love Hugh Grant even more now, because imagine having tickets to Wimbledon, but you just couldn't give a fuck and you have a doo-doos while you're there. I mean, the guy is just, you know, to me, that is a sign of absolutely being so comfortable in the world that you can just have a sleep while the greatest tennis in the world is taking place in front of you. I love it.
It does make me nervous for my 50s, though, because if you are just like clapping a little DOS, because he's there by intention. He's not exactly in his lounge. Like, he's actually out in public, and he's just...
Yeah, I love it. All right, so have you got any idea of who to kind of pip for the post in terms of the men? Because you've mentioned the women now. But what about the men at Wimbledon? Who are we looking at? Obviously, Alcaraz, obviously, Sinner.
Yeah, so it's kind of gone to form, I would say, obviously gone to seedings. And that's what you really want. You know, right now, as we said in the French Open, it was the passing of the baton. It was the first time the two finalists weren't born in the 90s. You know, we had the two young guys, Sinner and Alcaraz, together. And they're in the semifinals. So Alcaraz will be taking on Taylor Fritz. He's a fifth seed American guy, should get through him. And then the other one, the big sentimental crowd favorite one, will be Sinner versus Djokovic. So Djokovic is hanging on there on pure experience, muscle memory, and hears. He's 38. Sinner is much, much younger. So you would expect the Alcaraz Sinner final to take place this weekend on Sunday. And in many ways, it'll be the best thing for it. But there's always that thing about Wimbledon, it's like a massive pantomime. It's like, so one thing of, but can the past champ, the guy who's on his last legs, can he come through? It's a very British sort of story. So if you like that, then today from like 4 o'clock on Centre Court, you'll be able to watch the Sinner Djokovic semi-final, which will be the big highlight. And then, yeah, I mean, I would definitely say Sinner Alcaraz, it was the greatest game any of us have seen, that French Open final. And if they can do something similar on grass, it really is going to be a special weekend for tennis.
A couple of comments here for you, Ben. Ben, how is that brandy cooler in the bus? You should have warmed up with a shower beer. You can't just hit Brunas at 11 a.m. on an empty tank. Does he know something about your experience in Spain?
No, he's talking about my Loftus experience. As mentioned, had a couple of beers in the car park. Right. And for me, brandy was Brandy's just pre-game, so lie in the stomach with the beers, get there, but then just before you're about to go, as you walk into the grandstand, that's when your liquid goes dark, and that's when, you know, that's when you really kick on. But on the way back, yeah, on the way back, we basically had three bottles of brandy. It didn't last long between 12, 15 of us.
Yes!
Hugh was probably pissed on champagne as well at Wimbledon. That's Hugh Grant. I just love him. He was complaining the other day about something I want to ask both of you about. Why, and Simpiwe, you do this. What is with people carrying around bottles of water? Are they worried they're going to run out of water? Does your bottle keep, in your case, I think it just keeps it cool, right? And you like really cold water. So I kind of understand that if that's your explanation. But he was saying his kids have to go to school with these big bottles of water. And he's like, what, is there no water at school? That was something Hugh Grant was talking about the other day. It's also a very old man thing to moan about stuff like that. But why has it become almost like a status symbol to have your bottle of water with you and then sip on it through a straw or knock it back in like work or on public transport? What's that all about?
I think just taking me out of it, the reality is that we as a generation now live in like this experience economy, right? And because things are getting so expensive, how you used to show off that you had money has changed, right? And now one of those things is being able to afford like expensive water bottles. Like the reason why the kids want to have those water bottles is because it's a Stanley, most probably. Like if we look at it, it's not because you just want to a regular no-name brand. It's because you want, you know, something that we've seen is quality, it's expensive, it has the status of like, oh, you can afford this. But also another thing I know for me.
So it's just a flex. Is that what you're saying?
It is a flex. It's the new flex. And we could even look at it in terms of how like Louis Vuitton and other brands have diversified how luxury gets access to people, right? It's no more the bags because people can't afford the bags anymore. So now they've opened up these cafes where now you can have a taste of luxury. Like you can buy coffee, you know, you might not afford the bag, but hey, I can afford the coffee, which costs like 10 times more than what a coffee should be. And you start bragging about that. You start bragging about the fact that I can afford the Louis Vuitton cake. And I went there and I had the taste of luxury. And that's basically the era that I'm living in.
So,
and now the
right,
water bottles are the new flakes.
So Ben, to tie this to sports people, do the sports people have some responsibility in making us, because I mean, we're talking about tennis just now. They have branding on everything, you know, the water bottles, the cooler box, the snacks they eat, the wristband they got on, the everything that they wear obviously is branded. And maybe for poor people and for people who really have nothing to flex about, if they buy one or two of these cheap things, it makes them feel better about themselves.
I guess. Gareth, I sent something to James about this whole water bottle thing and how comical it's become. But
yeah,
look, I always think it's great if people drink more water, amazing, but it has gone too far because now, as Sim said, it's now a status thing to have. It's a very odd thing that your status should come through your hydration, which is the most basic of human functions. It just doesn't make much sense to me. But if you are drinking an extra 2 liters a day, maybe it's
if it's actually sitting there. No, sure. Maybe if it's sitting in front of people, they'll actually do it. I used to buy Voss water, says Bitcoin Boot, in America because it's glass. Now it's marketed to those who want to brag. Yeah, I remember the first time I saw Voss water was in Dubai Airport on the way somewhere. And I thought, wow, what a nice bottle. It was glass and had this nice gray top. And I thought, I need to... All my water bottles in the fridge because I like very cold water, just like Simpiwe. I'll see if I can get some Voss water. Well, it was unbelievably difficult to find those. Now I see them being sold in shops, but they're plastic. So it's not as cool. So I don't want them anymore.
Yeah, you pay a lot of money for plastic water. It's like those Fiji water. It's a lovely idea. It's also in shitty plastic nowadays.
Listen, how much do those Fiji waters cost? Because I saw like I think it was over 100 rand for a bottle.
I saw a bottle of 120 recently.
Wow.
And I tell you what, it's not different to anything else really. But even if that water has come out of the arsehole of a unicorn.
Are you sure, Ben?
Yeah. But if that water is...
Take a lot of saying it's 1.5. I mean, 1.1. 1,101.
For one bottle?
One bottle.
No, okay, no, sorry. Okay. It's 24 packs.
Pack of 10.
But if you bought 24, it'll cost you 1,100 rand. And take a lot.
Sims, I've got to ask. When did society become so poor that we referred to thousands as 1 point? Because that was the way you referred to a million. And then with inflation and Cyril maths, people now go, oh yeah, he got like 1.4 for it. And he means thousands. You want to know how bad inflation is? Well, that becomes part of like the dialect.
Yeah.
We cooked, Ben. I told you we cooked. Like, it
was just like... Well, I see anyone remember Vorta in the early 2000s. Vorta was like a vodka-infused alcoholic water or something. Remember that?
I love those. Those were great. I used to work for the company that made those.
When I was still underage.
No, that's nice. I wish they'd bring something like that back. Because girls don't know what to drink, and you don't really want to see girls knocking back double brandies. It's very undignified.
Yeah, not at first. But yeah, I mean, you get those hard seltzers now, which have taken that sort of space.
Based on past performance, says Christian, Carlos Alcaraz is the favorite to win, given his recent Wimbledon titles and strong 2025 form, though Novak Djokovic remains in a significant contender. All right, so Christian wants to take your job, Ben, as a sports commentator, judging by that comment.
So what is Alcaraz, your take? I think he's defending champ. He's got those attributes to see, like, he basically looks like if Pete Sampras was a gymnast and was on Ritalin. Like, he's got so many amazing qualities to him on that surface. And even though points don't go as long on grass, they finish a lot quicker, his ability to just go every single ball is quite demoralizing against other players. So you think you've got a winner, but then Oak is so fast on his feet, he'll get there. You know, he hasn't got the big booming serve of someone who's been a Wimbledon champion in the past, just because he's not as tall. But yeah, it's hard to see someone beating Alcaraz. I really do. And also, it's the similarities between like tennis and MMA is that you get some fighters who are phenomenal in the first few rounds, but if you take them into the later rounds, they just gas out. And we saw that with Sinner at the French Open. He's never won a match that's gone over, I think, 3.5 hours or 3 hours. So you take him to those deep waters on those skinny legs, and then, yeah.
That's a very, very cool description of him, Pete Sampras on Ritalin, the gymnast's body. But here's a question for you from the other side, something else that we haven't actually brought up today at all. What is your take, Ben, from Carol Jean? She says, what is your take on Horny Horner and his leaving Red Bull? Because obviously Formula One is on people's minds, not only because there's always Formula One on the go, but the movie just came out and everybody tells me it's brilliant and we've got to go and see it.
Well, guys, okay, well, we've got a couple of minutes for this one. Yeah, look, I think if your last name's Horner, you've got to try keeping the pants. Otherwise, people are going to have a field day with allegations come out. So, yeah, Horny Horner, who's married to Ginger Spice.
Oh.
Who, if you're not old enough, she was a Spice Girl. Spice Girls. He married Jerry Halliwell.
Oh.
And He's been the team principal at Red Bull for quite a while, so much so that he's actually had like two golden eras within that. There was the one with the German guy. I forget his name now, but they won a few titles with I'm forgetting his name now. German guy. And then obviously now with Verstappen, they've done so bloody well, but the team is going backwards. It's very Max dependent. And now I think they've given Horner the flick for a couple of reasons. Look, he was cleared of being a horny old bastard. But some of the WhatsApps have come out, and basically he was inappropriately WhatsApping young girls on the Red Bull sort of team. Like to the point saying that he, you know, he's been thinking about these girls and now he's knocking one off in his plane. It got a bit spicy. But like I said, he was officially cleared of any wrongdoing there, but I think they wanted him out. And if you mix performance with horn doggery, ultimately it becomes a very slippery slope. And now he's out in his ass. But the whole thing about Max wanting to leave Red Bull is another part of the story which isn't exactly great for the team. And the fact that no one else can drive the car other than Max has made the team really shitty. So, yeah, I would say it's in a lot of drama around that team right now. Horner getting the sack is maybe like 50% of it. But, yeah, I stand what I said to start with. You know, you can't throw it around no matter who you are. If you're going to be a dirty old man with a young woman, it's going to come back and haunt you. And that's where he is, unfortunately. Yeah. He'll be falling asleep at Wimbledon next year. Let's just say that.
Well, there's a couple of comments here. Horner should have left 18 months ago, says Dirk. When the first sex allegation started, it was downhill from there, and the Verstappen family has a lot of influence in Red Bull. The person you were thinking about is Sebastian Vettel, I think, Ben.
Sebastian Vettel.
And then Nunya Biz says, I loved Sporty Spice. Well, there was a Spice Girl for everyone. There was Ginger. I don't know if she was anyone's favorite, but Ginger Spice. Well, Jerry Halliwell.
She had the biggest boobs, Gareth. So she was the one that was going to get the young boys to be excited about that.
Okay. There was Sporty Spice. Scared.
Oh, fuck, the 90s were awesome.
Sipua, you won't know any of this, but this is like... All right, so there's Scary, Sporty, Ginger, Posh, and Bear.
And Baby. Bear this back. And with the amount of pedos in Britain, I guess, again, the demographic was being fulfilled there.
All right, this is great. I'm starting. It's all coming back to me now. All right, so basically, Jerry Halliwell married that guy. That's amazing. I honestly didn't think she'd ever find a husband. That's great. Has Scaredy Spice ever found a husband?
She had a kid with Eddie Murphy, didn't she?
She wasn't.
I don't think they ever got married, but yeah, she, I think, had one or maybe even two scary kids with Eddie Murphy.
All right, we can. Okay, Sugar Spice and Everything Nice is Sugar Chabalala. Well, that's your name, so you would go with that. Oh my God. Ginger was the freckled spice, according to Vyasan this morning. Yeah. So
part of being Ginger.
This is great. Thank you, Ben. Enjoy Spain. I think it's terrific that you get to go on this live golf experience. And let us know how it goes next week when we see you back in studio.
Just living my life, hey guys. Yeah. So
living your best life.
I'm very disoriented, but yeah, obviously I'm here. So today's Friday. Going to be on the golf course. It's going to be amazing. If you do like golf and you like those kind of things, follow me on Instagram. I'll be uploading a lot.
All right, Ben, thank you. And Sims and I will be back in the next couple of minutes to take you into tech. We haven't spoken about gadgets and technology for a long time. It's time we catch up, see whether we've been missing anything. Because, you know, these days, I got to tell you, I'm just waiting for some breakthrough thing, like where this phone can charge from the air, or you don't have to use a million accessories to get it to do the things that it's meant to do. Let's see. We'll speak to Tiennis. He's our guy when it comes to tech, and we'll find out all about what the latest developments are in all kinds of things, not just gadgets, not just the internet, not just AI, but lots of places, including some pretty horrific things coming out of Grok at the moment that have got people second-guessing whether AI is actually intelligent at all. We'll talk about that and a whole lot more. Don't go anywhere.